On 100.1 FM, you are listening to KMXT Kodiak. It's your public radio station. Currently 51 degrees with smoky skies out there right now. Coming up on the Midday Report, a slew of wildfires is burning in the interior. We have lots of stories about that. Repatriated remains of four members of the Lutik community came to their final resting places in Kodiak this week. The EPA has moved to restrict the mining of the Pebble deposit, but local leaders and regional representatives are calling on the EPA for more permanent protections. We have a rundown on who's leading the pack in the special primary for the U.S. House.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Some of the people closest to former President Donald Trump are painting a picture of a Republican leader determined to prove that election fraud cost him the 2020 election, even though some of his closest allies at the time, including former Attorney General Bill Barr, essentially told him there was no there there.
I thought, boy, if he really believes this stuff, he has, you know, lost contact he's become detached from reality.
Detached from reality, one of the central arguments a House Select Committee is making as it holds several public hearings about its investigation into what led to last year's insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. NPR's Tom Dreisbach has more on the in-person and videotaped testimony from Barr and other witnesses during the panel's second hearing today.
Several officials said in sworn depositions that they thought the former president's repeated election fraud claims were wrong, and they told him so. Like former Attorney General Bill Barr, he called some election fraud conspiracies, quote, idiotic, and used an expletive for others.
I told him that the stuff that his people were shoveling out to the public were that the claims of fraud were and, you know, he was indignant about that.
Former Trump campaign manager Bill Stepien said he also disagreed with the claims.
I didn't think what was happening was necessarily honest or professional at that point in time.
The committee says its upcoming hearings will provide further evidence that Trump's fraud claims helped incite the January 6th attack. Tom Dreisbach, NPR News.
People's outlook on inflation next year is worse. Here's NPR's Scott Horsley.
A new survey from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York shows Americans, on average, expect inflation will be around 6.6% a year from now. That's higher than people were predicting a month ago. But the outlook for inflation 3 years from now has not changed. People still think inflation will settle down by then to something under 4%. That would be less than half the current inflation rate, though still about twice as high as the Fed's long-term inflation target. Strong demand coupled with limited supply has prices currently climbing at the fastest pace in more than four decades. The Fed hopes to tamp down demand by raising interest rates, but for now, the average consumer expects real spending to keep climbing. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
There's the outlook, and there's right now. As NPR's David Gura reports, big declines on Wall Street today are reflecting real concerns about a recession.
It's a sign of how much pessimism there is on Wall Street. The S&P, which is this really broad benchmark of all kinds of public companies, fell more than 20% from its high right after the opening bell. Trillions of dollars are invested in index funds made up of stocks in the S&P 500. So when its value falls, well, that hurts Americans who use those funds to save for retirement. Investors worry that if the Fed continues to raise interest rates aggressively, it'll slow down the U.S. economy too much.
NPR's David Gura. The Nasdaq closes down 4.5%. This is NPR.
NPR News is presented
by Ohio usted, now have the option of arming
Providence,
employees
Kodiak Island
bill,
Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas and Go at the Y, and Gas and Go at Mill Bay.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The repatriated remains of four members of the Lutik community came to their final resting place at a cemetery in Kodiak this week. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports.
Members of the Shunack tribe and the Aleutic Museum gathered at Kodiak City Cemetery for the burial on a recent sunny Monday. The graveside service was led by the local Russian Orthodox Church. April Counselor is the executive director at the Aleutic Museum in Kodiak, which coordinated the reburial. She says the homecoming was long overdue.
There's a growing awareness that it is not fair or just to hold on to ancestral human remains.
Of the four individuals laid to rest, one was repatriated from a university collection, and two were returned by the Alaska State Museum. The fourth was found during construction on private land. The Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, which was passed in 1990, was meant to codify the process of returning cultural items, including human remains, to the tribes they belong to. But Counselor says it's been slow going. The museum has identified the remains of more than 160 Native individuals that have yet to be repatriated to Kodiak, and there's likely more they're unaware of. Counselor says the remains of the four buried recently in Kodiak were too old to be identified, but there's a sense that they're finally home.
We consider any ancestral remains to be part of our family, and for those individuals who were reburied, I can only think that they may now feel some peace.
That's a step in the right direction, according to Counselor, that likely won't be the last. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
The Environmental Protection Agency moved to restrict mining in the Pebble deposit last month. But as KDLG's Brian Venois reports, it does not restrict other mining in the region, and local leaders are calling on the EPA for more permanent protections.
On June 1st, local leaders held a press conference to discuss the EPA's proposed protections for waters and wetlands around the Pebble deposit.
While this is an important step, we need comprehensive protection so that future generations are not faced with this threat.
That was Bristol Bay Native Association Natural Resources Director Gayla Hosseth. She and representatives from other regional organizations say the EPA's proposal doesn't go far enough. United Tribes of Bristol Bay board member and Chugiung Tribal Chief Thomas Tilden says Bristol Bay can learn from other regions and rivers in the country.
We don't want to go the way of the Humboldt River, where there are no further salmon in that river. We need to continue to save what we have so that it feeds the nation, it feeds our people, it feeds the three ethnic groups that are within our area.
The EPA proposed to restrict mining waste disposal in watersheds associated with the Pebble deposit, invoking its authority under a section of the Clean Water Act. In January, the EPA said the discharge of materials associated with the mine would negatively affect the area's salmon habitat. The four pillars of the decision include the loss of about 8.5 miles of known salmon spawning grounds, the loss of over 91 miles of additional streams that support those grounds, the loss of over 2,000 acres of wetlands in the watershed, and reducing flow to nearly 30 more miles of other streams. The three primary watersheds affected in the area are the North Fork Coctulee River, the South Fork Coctulee River, and the Upper Telluric Creek watersheds. The EPA will host public hearings both virtually and in person in Dillingham on June 16 and in New Halen on June 17. Robert Samuelson is the board chairman for the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation. He stressed the importance of testifying.
It isn't walking in. This is going to be a little different. So you need a pre-register to testify. I know we're all busy with salmon season, with our subsistence, but we need you to come out and protect Bristol Bay for future generations.
KDLG reached out to a few people who previously voiced support for the proposed Pebble Mine, however none responded in time for this broadcast. In previous public hearings, supporters have pointed to an increase in jobs and a boost for the local economy. People can submit written comments on the proposal through July 5. However, anyone who wants to testify must register ahead of time at epa.gov/Bristol Bay. In Dillingham, I'm Brian Venois.
Sarah Palin is leading the pack in the special primary for U.S. House. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has preliminary results from Saturday's election.
Palin, a Republican, has about 30% of the votes counted so far. She's followed by Republican Nick Begich, who took 19%, and nonpartisan Al Gross with 12%. Democrat Mary Peltola is in fourth place with 7% of the vote. If that order holds, Palin, Begich, Gross, and Peltola will be on the special general ballot in August. Republican Tara Sweeney is in fifth place, followed by Santa Claus, a liberal city councilman from North Pole. The Division of Elections counted more than 100,000 ballots on Saturday night. That's most of the ballots that the division has received so far, but election officials don't know how many ballots are in the mail. Envelopes had to be postmarked by Saturday. They'll still be counted if they arrive by June 21. The division says it will have more results Wednesday. The ballots counted Saturday are from all over the state. They include ballots mailed, hand-delivered, and cast in person. The special election is to serve the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term. Alaskans will determine the winner in the August 16 election by ranked choice voting. Meanwhile, more than 30 candidates are running to serve the congressional term that begins in January. All four frontrunners in the special election are in that race, too. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Smoke from dozens of wildfires in western Alaska began spreading across the state over the weekend. National Weather Service meteorologist Bobby Bianco says the smoky conditions are the result of a low-pressure system moving into the west coast and generating southwest winds,
which is carrying all the smoke from southwest Alaska to the northeast into interior Alaska.
According to the State Division of Forestry, 45 active wildfires in western Alaska had burned more than 250,000 acres as of Sunday. The Weather Service's Bianco says smoke from those blazes is expected to clear from the interior later on Monday.
Going to be seeing a bit of a pattern change once again, where we have high pressure building back in and more easterly winds and more northeasterly winds, which should be helping with clearing out the interior.
Bianco says the new weather pattern is what's known as a thermal trough,
which basically means that we're going to be seeing some more warmer temperatures, sunshine, as well as an increased amount of thunderstorms.
So there's a danger of dry lightning starting new fires across the interior.
State Fire Information Officer Sam Harrell says a lack of lightning in the interior so far this season has resulted in fewer wildfires in the region. But two new human-caused blazes off the Steese Highway north of Fairbanks were worked on over the weekend.
The Bedrock Fire is just west of Central, about 5 miles outside of Central. And it is contained now, and some smoke jumpers are up there finishing the mop-up on that. The Bulgin Creek Fire in between Central and Circle is going to take a little more work to mop up, but they've got hose lay all the way around it.
Harrell says a fire investigator is looking into the sources of both starts. Meanwhile, the intense wildfire situation in southwest Alaska has prompted call-up of the state's second Type 2 incident management team and an influx of additional resources from outside, including a jet air tanker and a fleet of Fireboss aircraft.
The water-scooping single-engine tankers and their bird dog, which is a lead plane that guides them into their drop zones, those arrived in Palmer from British Columbia. And they are headed to McGrath to start working on these fires that are burning down in the southwest area there.
Harrell says additional firefighters from the lower 48 have also come north.
Five hotshot crews from the northwest, and two of them are headed to the East Fork Fire by St. Mary's. Two are headed to the Ogallala Mountain Fire, threatening the communities of Sleep Mute, Red Devil, Georgetown, Crooked Creek, and Nepean Mute. One other crew is going to be available to the BLM Alaska Fire Service for them to assign.
Harrell says another plane load of hotshot crews from the lower 48 is expected later this week. As of Sunday, over 461,000 acres had burned statewide in Alaska, the second highest amount at this point in the wildfire season in the past 30 years. One of those wildfires burning southwest of the western Alaska communities of Sleet Mute and Red Devil has grown to roughly 95,000 acres, creating smoky skies over the entire YK Delta and those villages especially. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
The Ogallala Mountain Fire is burning near the Kuskokwim River, about 10 miles southwest of Sleep Mute and 12.5 miles from Red Devil. Alaska Division of Forestry spokesman Brentwood Reed says eight smoke jumpers and a 22-member hotshot crew headed to the region over the weekend to fight the fire. Reed says the focus right now is on sleep mute.
Today, what they're going to be doing is prioritizing structure protection on two homes that are occupied. That's the priority. And then just prepare start preparing the community in the event that the fire continues to move that direction. There was no real movement yesterday.
There are currently 85 wildfires burning in Alaska as of Monday morning, with seven of them staffed. While a detection aircraft crew estimated the Ogallala Mountain fire to be about 125,000 acres, Reed says due to heavy smoke, it's likely the fire is still between 95,000 and 100,000 acres. Sleep Mute resident Tim Andronoff says he started to notice the smoke going into the weekend.
3 or 4 days ago, it started getting really smoky. In the morning, we couldn't even see across the river.
As of now, Andronoff says he's waiting on word from local fire officials before he starts to prepare for an evacuation. Reed says that doesn't look likely.
That's not an area where the fire is going to probably roll through and endanger people. So it's very unlikely we're going to see any evacuations for that area, I would say. But they do want to make sure that the homes are prepared. So as the fire comes, if it comes in different little waves here and there, they're able to defend the structures.
Meanwhile, over in Red Devil, Reed says the community is in slightly better shape, largely due to a fire from a few years ago.
They had a big fire in 2019 just to the west of Red Devil, so there's a big fire scar. But Red Devil could be impacted, and they did reconnaissance last night to determine what the priority for doing preparations in Red Devil will be.
In the meantime, Andronoff in Sleep Mute says it's starting to rain, and he's hopeful it'll slow the fire down. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
The fire threatening four villages on the Yukon River is historically massive. On Sunday, the fire was within 3.5 miles of one of those villages, and many people had already evacuated. KYUK's Olivia Eberts reports, residents who chose to stay are pitching in to support the efforts to keep their community from burning.
Pamela Tai is standing over the stove in the home she shares with 11 family members. They've all chosen to stay, despite the fire's proximity to the village. Outside the kitchen window, smoke blankets the Yukon and Andrefsky rivers. Tai is making meatballs.
Making my balls. Balls of glory. Hamburger balls and gravy. That's what's for dinner over rice.
She's been cooking all day. Earlier, it was a big pot of goulash. She donated that to the firefighters for dinner.
I make it with love, honey, with love. So when they eat, they fill themselves up with lots of love.
Many women like Tai have been volunteering their efforts to cook for the 130 firefighters in town, lugging meals to a makeshift distribution center each evening. From there, the food gets sent to firefighters' camps on the outskirts of town. Out on the tundra, they've been digging wide lines of defense in the surrounding area to try to prevent the fire from reaching town. Ty's 17-year-old son, Cameron, has been helping too, along with other men in the community. They've been clearing brush away from critical structures so that if the fire does reach town, the buildings won't burn. They had the older men cut down trees and the younger ones drag them down to the river. Back at the house, Cameron said doing this work gave him mixed feelings.
It's really good to see most of the community and most of the men that live here work together. It was fun, but it is kind of scary. And we're being really cautious, and we at least did a little something for our community. And I just pray and hope that nothing gets any worse than this.
The fire has more than doubled in size over the past few days. Climate specialist Rick Toman says that over 120,000 acres, this is the biggest wildfire the region has ever seen, and the second largest tundra fire in Alaska in over 40 years. Toman says a warming climate has contributed to this fire's fast spread. Over the past century, the YK Delta has warmed 3 times as quickly as the lower 48. Local officials estimate about half the community chose to leave on Thursday and Friday. Evacuation flights were offered to elders and vulnerable people for the first 2 days. Others left by boats bound for downriver villages or fish camps. So far, evacuations have been optional, but that could change. Elder Mike Joe Sr. is Cameron Tai's grandfather and meatball cook Pamela Tai's father. His recliner is parked in front of the TV.
Estimates on the fire size have more than doubled since yesterday.
He's watching St. Mary's on local TV news. He says he wants the whole family to stay as long as possible because he thinks that leaving would be hard on the kids. But he says it wasn't an easy decision. He gestures out the window.
I don't think nobody wants to see smoke and loneliness out there, to not see your neighbors and your friends out there.
He says he's prepared to evacuate if the fire reaches his backyard.
We got the boats all ready to go and all our grub, everything.
Most of the family's possessions are packed in their boat at the harbor. Their food is next to the front door, staged in 5-gallon plastic buckets whose handles they can grab easily in case they need to run out the door. Their plan would be to boat across the Yukon River and camp out until it's safe to return. In St. Mary's, I'm Olivia Eberts.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
Insight Daily Radio. Iconic guitarist Eric Clapton's lifelong passion for the blues burns brightly in a new film and soundtrack release entitled Nothing But the Blues. The documentary film, which was nominated for an Emmy Award but was broadcast only once in the U.S. in 1995, has been upgraded to 4K for its long-awaited official Blu-ray and DVD release. The new soundtrack album features all of the music from the 1995 film, and also includes more than an hour of previously unreleased live performances recorded in 1994 during the legendary guitarist tour supporting From the Cradle, his Grammy-winning multi-platinum blues album. Eric spoke about his lifelong love and respect for the blues and its impact on his playing.
But really, the bones of the thing is coming from inside me and my need to pay back the tribute to all these people that I heard from day one, from the cradle to the grave, really, that I want to emulate and pay back and say thank you to. And I'm actually trying as hard as I can to replicate what they did, but it doesn't come, I mean, it still comes out as me, which is the beauty of the whole exercise. Because I used to think that pure imitation was not good enough, but of course there is no such thing. And I'm finding that out. And as close as I try and get to the original, it still sounds like me doing it.
That's iconic guitarist Eric Clapton, whose long-awaited documentary film and music soundtrack, Nothing But the Blues, will be released on multiple formats on June 24th. There's more at ericclapton.com. Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Monday. It is the 13th day of June, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 5:08, and it will set again at 11:11 tonight. That will give us 18 hours and 3 minutes of daylight, a gain of 1 minute and 10 seconds compared to yesterday. A record low for this date was 35 degrees. That was set in 1939 and 1985. And a record high was 68, set in 1915. Both are safe. 51 degrees outside right now under smoky, cloudy skies. They have wind speeds from the southeast at 12 miles per hour at the airport. 74% humidity and 10 miles of visibility. 40% chance of rain today. 80% chance of rain tonight. And an 80% chance of rain tomorrow as well. For today, look for a high of 53, southeast winds to 10. East winds to 10 tonight with a low of 48, and a high of 54 tomorrow with east winds to 15. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 2:28 this afternoon. That will be a 6.9-foot tide. It'll be followed by a low tide at 7:33 this evening of 2.1 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 2:49 this afternoon. That will be a 12.8-foot tide in Larson Bay. That'll be followed by a low tide at 8:23 p.m. of 2.8 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Southeast 15 today, seas to 4 feet. Watch for areas of patchy fog. For tomorrow, east 15, seas to 6 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, Kodiak's west side, small craft advisory for tomorrow. West wind to 15 knots today, seas to 2 feet. For tomorrow, northeast 25, seas to 5 feet in the Shelikof. This Friday at the Kodiak Island Brewing Company, they are having an LGBTQ plus trivia night. It's sponsored by Million Recipes, and it's a $5 cover charge as all, and two drink tokens come with that. Can't beat that price. And it's to raise awareness about LGBTQ history, terminology, culture, legislature, science, in a fun and interactive way. The night will begin with a brief talk about the Sukpiak traditions around gender, sexuality, and spirituality. You can find out more at the Kodiak Pride Facebook page. But again, that's this Friday. Doors open at 8. Trivia starts at 8:30. It's time. Beartown Market boxes are back as of today. The Summer Solstice 2022 Beartown Market box includes a bright and sunny array of goods from Wandering Turtle Glass Art, Alaska Lux, Candace's Kodiak Creations, Emerald Isle Essentials, and Natasha Zahn Priestess Art. Find the Beartown Market in a box for sale on the Kodiak Arts Council website at kodiakarts.org. The boxes will be ready to pick up June 18th, 12 to 2 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium entrance.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 4, date issued 9:30 a.m. on June 12th. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, June 14th, to 9 p.m. Thursday, June 16th, in the following areas. In the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District, the Outer Iakulik section of the Southwest Kodiak District, and the Cape Alitak, Humpy Dead Man, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, June 14th to 9 p.m. Wednesday, June 15th in the following areas. In the Anton Larsen Bay, Sheratine Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spearden Bay, Zacher Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. The Northwest Afognak, Paul's Bay, and Paranosa Bay sections of the Afognak District, and the Eastside Kodiak District, and the Big River and Outer Kukak Bay sections of the Mainland District. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Tuesday, June 14th to 9 p.m. Wednesday, June 15th in the following areas. At Kaflia Creek, stream number 262301 to the stream terminus, and at Saltry Creek, stream number 259415 to the stream terminus. As previously announced, the following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, Duck Bay, and Izhuit Bay sections of the Afognak District, and the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the Mainland District, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purseine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are reduced in the following locations until further notice: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. In Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, and to the stream terminus of Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. And in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart in detail in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations, and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.